And I remember seeing my parents either side of me. And I remember they looked like giants. And I remember their legs, you know, seemed to go on endlessly. And their bodies on the ends, you know. And I remember looking up. And I distinctly remember my mum and dad having an argument. And I distinctly remember how lonely I felt whilst all that was going on and I was being ignored. And I think there is, you know, obviously I felt rejected there, and I did have problems of security as I grew up in my family. And being helped to be able to face those things and bring them out at a right time has got me through them. It's very difficult, isn't it, to help a child to face those things. We need to be really asking God's help, and that we need to be subtle in how we do it. But it really is important that we get clear the difference between rejecting the sin, rejecting that which is wrong and evil, and yet maintaining that call of love. And I want to say a bit more about that when we talk about teenagers, just perhaps share a personal experience, so maybe that will help too. But I really hope you don't feel we just got pat answers. We underneath this, we do not, you know, if I went into a telephone box, I couldn't rip my jersey off, and underneath there would be a sort of super dad underneath, you know, zoom in and meet the needs and answer the problems. My son confessed the other day how he had to apologize, because he is a pretty good dad, but he was looking after one of his friend's kids, and he had been despising the way that they'd brought that kid up, and he was babysitting, and the child behaved abominably. It cried from the moment it was left with them until the moment it was taken back. And he thought, well, I've got to do something about this. I just cannot allow this to go on. And he stepped in on the basis of what he felt was right, and it didn't work. And when his friends came back, he had to confess, and they were really angry with him. And it took them quite a while to forgive him for doing what he did. So, you know, there just aren't easy answers. But we do have a good God, and he's going to bring us through and help us where we fail. We want to talk a bit about teenagers, but just before we do, can I say that we tend to talk about negative things here, and I think it's important to talk about discipline, but the positive aspect is that we need to find things that we can actually do with our children. Love needs some kind of expression, and I think it's really, really important that we find ways of blessing our kids, things that we will enjoy doing with them and that they will enjoy doing with us. And that, I suppose, is where hobbies come together, where learning together, where involving them in work can be fun. I remember my grandpa used to involve me. He was a building and decorating expert, one of the old school. Used to mix up his own paints from powders and things like this and get the right colours, and was one of these craftsman wallpaperers, and little wrinkles that he gave to me. I'm not terribly good myself, but I remember things that he taught me back there, because we enjoyed doing things together. And in a society where we're all so busy and we've got the next job in line, the next thing that we're going to do in line, and that it's more trouble to try and get your child involved with you, because you've got to take time, and if they're going to do a bit of painting, they're going to dribble it on the floor and you're going to have to go over it and all this kind of thing. We tend to push them out because it's inconvenient, and thus they don't learn and they don't enjoy doing things with us. I think one of the big things that take us on into the teenage years that can hold us together is the fact that we actually do things together. And again, perhaps we'll touch on that. But my problem in terms of hobbies is that I've got too many. I have to cut them down. I have to have a sort of hobby slashing time every sort of 2 or 3 years, because I've accumulated a lot of hobbies and I've sort of trimmed it down to a few things now. But many of them I've actually done with my children. The reason I'm continuing in them is because they've got bored and I've carried on with the hobby. So we need to find positive ways of sharing our lives together with our kids. And it's not all work and it's not all discipline. The end in view is that we can enjoy one another's company and one another's fellowship. So shall we talk a bit about teenagers and then leave a bit about questions and answers? Someone said, are we going to talk about youth work and Sunday school work and that kind of thing? We'd like to, but we haven't got time to do that. But we will just say a bit about teenagers. Are you going to kick off?
Yeah, okay.
That's what it says on here.
All right. excuse me a minute. Do you want to talk about what teenagers should know about parents?
I think it would be really helpful. Just skate through it. We haven't got time to go through it.
Skate through it.
Right. We've got sort of two sets of things here. One, because we often like to talk to parents and teenagers together, because it's there are certain things that it really is helpful for teenagers to hear about their parents with their parents sitting there beside them, and vice versa. So we're just going to skate through the things that we've said what every teenager should know about parents. The first thing is that parents need our understanding. They need the understanding of their teenagers, because basically we're not mature. We should be, but we aren't very mature. And that we really are just big kids, basically, most of us, with a veneer of adulthood being put on us. And I think it would be good if we actually conveyed that to our teenagers. They look at us and they don't realize, you see, what happens, that I've got a 50-year-old outside, but inside I'm just about 18. And that sort of doesn't change very much. And teenagers get very, they get very embarrassed, don't they, when suddenly mum takes off skipping up the road. And they cross over and they say, I don't want to be with you. And it's because you haven't conveyed to them that you may be old on the outside, but you're still very young on the inside. That parents, we need understanding because we get in a muddle. For example, often we muddle up, particularly women, we muddle up the difference between work and children. You see, I feel quite strongly that, about the fact that women slowly but surely begin to see the children as their work. The children aren't your work. Your work is the fabric of your house, the cleaning, the sewing, the washing, or the going out to work. Whichever, that's work. Children don't come into that category, but we mix them up together so that kids sort of have this feeling that they're work, and you know, we want to sort of get through them and out of them and round them and get them all sorted out and in a corner so that we can go on and start enjoying our lives. And it's good if we can see that about ourselves and explain that to our kids, that we fall into this trap of seeing them as part of our work. I don't believe they are. I believe they're in a totally different category. Parents are insecure. We often feel very insecure. We look at our teenagers and we think, oh, blow, where do they get their energy from? Where do they get their strength from? Where do they get their gift from? Where do they get their money from? We get insecure in all of these areas, and we aren't good at conveying that to them. We forget. You know, there's a super song that I used to hear when I was a girl, and I haven't heard it for years, but it said, why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today? And we forget. We forget that we were far from perfect, and we don't convey that. I enjoy telling young mums what I was like when I first got married, because I see this sort of pressure that they get under when I'm around, and when I feel that pressure, I think, now is the time to tell them what I was like when I was a newlywed. And when I tell them, sometimes I don't think they believe me. But I had this this theology that why wash anything up until it was all dirty? Worked very, very well. But you had to keep washing two cups up at the end, because you could never face washing the dinner service. Because I happened to have had a dinner service given to us when we got married, and I would work my way through it. But I came unstuck because I had a child with this same theology, and I ran out of nappies and was always having to go to the hand towels to provide something to mop this business up, while I thought, aha, this doesn't work anymore. I was in an absolute state when I was a newlywed. You know, it was chronic.
What's changed?
That sometimes we get stuck as parents. We get stuck as mums. We get stuck with sort of the meals. You know, we always have fish on Thursdays. And when the child comes in the door, when the teenager comes in, and they know that it's fish today, and they think, fish, you know, it's all so predictable. But it seems easy to us, because that's when the fish man calls and we buy it. And we don't think of just shoving it in the freezer and having it on Sunday, because Sunday is the roast day. And we get stuck. We get stuck in all sorts of ways. We get stuck in our fashions. We get stuck in, I'm going to date myself now, we get stuck in the 50s. And, you know, the kids look at us in this sort of utter disbelief. And they don't want you to come to the school because, you know, they wonder what their friends will think of this parent who looks like a cross between a, you know, Wurzel Gummidge and a teddy boy. And we do get stuck, and we need to see that, and we need help from our teenagers. That we get afraid. We get afraid because we believe that they've got some friends who'll lead them by the nose. And we forget that we had friends that led us by the nose, and that we can actually talk about that. That we are insecure in so many ways. We're untrained. Don't convey that to our kids, do we? That we've come into this business, lots of us, without any training whatsoever. They won't let you teach in a school unless you've been to college for at least 3 years. But anybody is allowed to have a baby and bring it up without any training whatsoever. And it's absolutely crazy. So we're untrained. God had a lot to do with us. And we often are impatient with conveying that to our kids. We zoom in with our teenagers from this sort of dizzy height of being who we are today, you know, and wearing our stripes on our chest, you know, even when we're in an argument with them about whether, well, which pop group is the best, you know, and it's all rubbish anyway, isn't it? I mean, all parents know that, don't they? That it's all total rubbish, that we are totally untrained for the job that we are doing. Do you want to come in?
Yeah, I think as far as training is concerned, our kids sort of ask questions about sex up to the age of 5, don't they? And when they start going to school, they stop asking. Have you noticed that they're very free, very open? But once they start mixing with other children, they suddenly get an understanding that there's something wrong here, and we don't know how to handle that. And suddenly, you know, I think most parents who've got little babies and things think, you know, when they get to 12, we're going to be able to speak freely about the facts of life. But we just don't realize that something happens out there when they go into the big wide world. And as Christine said, we've had no training. Nobody tells us how to bring up kids, really. The church has been just as bad. I mean, we're rectifying it now, but we've just assumed that all of these things are second nature. And as our kids sort of grow up from 5 to 12, we lose that contact, that freshness, and we can't say the things that we want to say. And by the time it's necessary for us to sit them down and talk about the facts of life, we're in the situation of being parents that are embarrassed. We're the kind of parents we never wanted to be. And we suddenly realize that we don't know what to do. So we do need one another's help. We need training from one another on the job. The next thing is that parents assume that their kids will be as bad as they are. I never forget one day, and I would never have thought this about myself, but one day my kid said to me, "Dad, can we go out to rec?" The rec being the local recreation ground. I suppose you have them around here. When they said that, I said, "The rec? You're not going up there, are you? The recreation ground? You actually mean the recreation?" "Yeah, Dad, we're going up the recreation ground." "What's up there that you want to do?" "Well, there's swings, Dad, and roundabouts, and children play, you know." And Christine said, "What on earth is the matter, dear?" Well, what had happened was I transferred myself back to the recreation ground, which was the scene of most of my vile exploits. You know, that little hut that they have in the recreation ground was where we used to congregate, and all kinds of evil plots and things happened there. And I just automatically assumed that if my children went to the recreation ground, that is what they would be doing. And I had raised up a standard for them. Christine said, "Well," she said, "I used to go to the recreation ground and never got up to that kind of thing at all." So I suppose on the one hand you've got naivety, on the other hand you've got suspicion. Somewhere in the middle, we've got to believe that our kids are going to be our kids, but they're not necessarily going to get into everything that we got into. Talking about rock music and things like that, the next thing I want to say is that parents often use authority to cover their fears. One day when we were in the lounge and this particular pop group came onto the television, I again reverted back to my youth. And my youth was such that we used to have parties, and they usually went on all night. Sometimes they went on all the next day and even the next night as well. And I associated with those parties a particular kind of music. And therefore, when I saw my kids getting involved in that kind of music, or the current vogue in music, again, my mind did a flip back. And there on the television, oh, we're back in sound again, you know, was this thing coming across that was going to pollute my kids. And I remember reverting into authority and pomposity, you know, typical sort of Captain Mannering or whatever. Switch that rubbish off, you know, flicked the switch and walked out of the room. And as I walked out of the room, the Lord said to me, "Son, who said that that was rubbish?" And I sort of, "Lord, what do you mean?" You know. And he said to me, the music is not rubbish. That guitarist is actually very talented and very gifted. The words that he's singing, I don't particularly associate with, but the music is coming from a gift that I gave to him, and you're calling it rubbish." And I found myself having to sort of come down off my pedestal, put away my army baton, and go back into the room and say, "Sorry, kids, Dad made a big mistake here." Switched it back on and said, "Listen to that music. Actually, it's great. It really is good. Now listen to the words. They're rubbish." And we immediately had a point of contact where we could look objectively at what was coming out of that screen. And I think Christians tend to feel that holiness is a series of negatives rather than hearing God. And the beauty of the Jesus that we serve is that he saw holiness as obedience to God and was able to move freely throughout society, recognizing that which was good and that which was evil. So we must not assume that our kids will be what we were. We must not use authority to cover our fears. And next, parents don't know when or how to give freedom. We find ourselves in a catch-22 situation. If we give freedom too soon, our kids are liable to fall into real problems. If we give it too late, they're liable to rebel. If they don't rebel, they're going to be pseudo-Christians. We're in a catch-22 situation. We can't win. Either they get into problems because we've given them that freedom, or they get into a rebellious state because we haven't. Or they become your model Christian, which is almost hateful. You know, it's, you know the sort of thing I mean? Kids that are good because they want to impress and because of all the wrong reasons. Sooner or later, that kind of thing collapses. And I think this is where we really do need to hear God. All of our kids have been different, but just let me tell you my experience with Johnny, who's the youngest. He's now 21. And when he was about 16, 14 to 16 period, it became clear that he was the one that was most like me in every way. His school reports came back with all the sort of things that my school reports had on. This young man has brains but doesn't use them. In actual fact, I found that is not true. I was really bitter when I discovered that I don't have brains. They lied all the time. I thought that they were going to be there when I needed them, and they weren't. But that's beside the point. Could do better, you know, if he tried harder. And he was a ringleader, yes, that's right. Our educational system does not tend to cover all the aspects of life and leadership. We have an academic motivation in the main, and a reward, achievement-orientated thing. And the quality that I had was to be able to, I was going to say, manipulate people, lead people, let's put it in the best light. And I could actually get a French essay done in my handwriting before assembly, you know, by someone in the form. So I didn't have to learn French if I could get somebody else to do it for me, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I believe had someone recognized that ability, they could have got hold of it and channeled it. But in school, what happened was that that was a threat to the system. And so I was oppressed in that ability that I had. It was not recognized. And, well, it was recognized amongst my friends, but not in the school, and consequently there was conflict all the way through. And I saw this happening to my son, and I thought, the idiot, why can't he learn from me? And I tried to explain to him what was happening, but he didn't hear. And then finally, one day, he went and did exactly what I would have done in a particular situation. I won't bore you with the details, but I was so furious. He happened to be in his bedroom at the time, and sitting on the sort of sideboard or whatever it was a baseball bat that we had bought for him as a sign of friendship when we were travelling through the States. And I was so angry, I got him around the neck, and he's quite a big lad, 16 then, got him on the around the neck, thrust him down to the floor, put my knee on his chest, and got hold of this baseball bat and held it over his head. And he looked me in the eye and he said exactly what I would have said to my dad. Go on, hit me. I dare you. And I chucked the baseball bat down and rushed into the bedroom and cried out to God, realizing I made a terrible mistake. And the Lord said, son, I've been trying to communicate something to you all this week. You've got to let him go. You've got to give him his freedom. You can no longer hold him and control him the way you used to. And all week I really had known that. See, I'd known what it was to be the prodigal son. I'd known what it was to run into the arms of father and be the prodigal and come back to God. I'd known what it was to be the elder brother. I knew what it was to be a Christian and feel that, why on earth should God bless those other Christians? They really don't deserve it. Do you know what I mean? That's the I'd known that, but I'd never known what it was like to be the prodigal father. And suddenly, I was in that situation. And the Lord said, son, you have got to let him go. And I was able to walk, because of God's help, into the bedroom and look Johnny in the eye and say, son, I'm really sorry for what I've done. You are now an adult. You have freedom. You can do virtually what you like. Not in my house, but you're a free agent now. You know what I believe. You know where I stand. I love you, and I want to continue loving you. And we entered into a new era together. We broke down and fell on one another's shoulders. He wept, I wept. And we established a relationship at that point, which I can understand that the father did with the prodigal. He gave him his freedom. He opened the door, and he let out the cord of love. And I can honestly say from that day to this, and it's about 5 years now, that our love relationship has intensified as time has gone by. John, who had made a commitment to Christ, and I believe still acknowledges God, but is in no way behaving like a Christian, and yet the door is open, and I know that he's free to come through that door at any time. And that's what it's all about. Now again, there's no easy way of doing this, but teenagers need to somehow understand the problems that we face, and maybe they need to see us in our weakness, saying, look, we've done it wrong, please forgive us, but now you're free. We don't agree with the way you're going to live, but we're going to give you your freedom. If you do that in my house, I'm really sorry, I can't allow it, but I'm still going to love you. I'm never going to stop loving you. And I believe that that's a very, very important thing, and a principle that we can learn from God as to how to bring up our kids. We use it in terms of the unsaved coming back to the Heavenly Father, which is great, but I think there's a real principle there for us in terms of how we behave with our teenage children. Chris?
We treat our teens like children, but we expect them to react like adults. It's not on, really, is it? That we make terrible mistakes in that way. I think that we need to see that there is a change has come. We're at the point of change. I know that God spoke to me very much about this a few years ago, and I spoke to the leaders at home and suggested that we had a sort of party when a young person came to the point where they felt that they were actually going to throw their lot into the church, that we had a party and that we invited them and celebrated them coming into the adult world, as we put it. And we've had one or two of those now. The women have got together with the girls, and the men have got together with the boys, and we've had one or two parties where the young person has invited both sexes. They've been quite different to one another. It isn't bar mitzvah, which is a Jewish way of doing things, but something quite similar to that. And it's been very good, actually, for the parents concerned, because it has changed things. You see, when you say you're part of the church, the teenager suddenly is in the adult world and must start reacting differently. If they've got a problem now with mum or dad, that they can't just rant and rave or go off them anymore. They can actually ask someone else in the church to come and sit in on the problem and talk it through with them. It does give a teenager a sense of being very secure and being responsible in certain ways. We have to change. I believe that we find it difficult, parents, to change when it comes to a simple thing like confidentiality. All parents love sharing these little anecdotes about their children. You mustn't do that as they grow up. Your children will hate it, and your teenagers despise it, and they stop confiding in you because they discover there is no confidentiality, that you just share it with anybody because they're your children. And you haven't seen now that there is something of maturity in them, an adult in them, that wants to share something without it going any further. And we don't often acknowledge that. See, we look at our culture and we say that to be an adult, you need to leave home. That's what our culture says. That when you marry, you set up a different household. You leave home. That's what our culture says. But who says that's Christian? That our children have a possibility of maturing in our home. They haven't got to leave home to do it. And we equate leaving home with becoming mature. And that some of our children have found their maturity in, well, all of them have found their maturity in the family and have come to a place where they've married and not wanted to leave home because there's been no necessity to leave home to get married. And our first one to get married, our son Matthew, he and his wife said, "Do we have to continue to look for this flat? There is enough room here, and we don't feel that we need to go off somewhere to do something over here that has got to be divorced from the family." And so they lived with us and are still living with us 9 years later. Our eldest daughter, they came to live with us, my eldest daughter and her husband. They came to live with us, and the pressure there for them to leave in the end was that they were having too many children. We didn't have enough room. There are other reasons for pulling apart. That if we can begin to treat our teenagers with respect, and it's always amazing to me, take this whole business of pop music, which in some ways is a mystery to me, but my son is educating me, my eldest son, he's definitely educating me. And it's a tremendous thrill to me to sit and watch Top of the Pops with them, with my son and his family, because he watches it with the television control in his hand. And a certain band or group will come on, and he says to his two very young children, they're both at school, and he says, "Now this is a group that we do not listen to. They're anti-God, they're anti-everything. We switch them off." Off it goes. We wait the 4 minutes and then on it goes again. And he teaches them. He teaches them about people's attitudes, the lyrics, the music. And I sit there and I think, where has he got all this from? And he's doing a very good job of it. And it's really funny because now when if I take Victoria, the oldest one, out with me and the television's on, she will nudge me and she'll say, "This is a group we shouldn't be watching, Grandma." And I think, ooh, right. You know, well, let's do something else then. So we need to encourage our teenagers into being adults, into having responsibility. And finally, we really do expect our kids to have learned in 6 months what it's taken us 20 years to learn. We really need to see that we have this sort of attitude that suddenly the light breaks, doesn't it? And you've really seen something. And then you can't understand anybody else who hasn't seen it. It's the same with being a Christian. You know, we walk through the world thinking, why don't they see that they need to be saved? Why don't they see that they need Jesus? The truth is, they don't. But then neither did we for however many years it was. But we have this attitude that we expect them to learn things overnight, and we get very impatient when they don't. And I believe that we need to see that that is really wrong, that we need to have the patience with them that God's had with us. And there are some areas where I'm still, over certain issues in my life, as short as two thick planks. But God is still there for me. He's still there with me. He still talks to me, and he still loves me, and he still understands me. And we need to convey to our teenagers that we want to be like that to them too.
Yeah, just a couple more minutes, and then we'll spend the last 10 minutes in questions, if that's okay. Thinking about what Christine was saying about expecting our kids to learn, I remember walking out of the nursery on one occasion. Well, not the nursery, sorry, out of the at one of our kids' bedrooms, saying, "Have you said your prayers?" You know, and the Lord said, as I closed the door, "Have you said yours?" And we haven't said anything about education. I happen to believe that there are two ways of educating our kids. One is by committing them to God and sending them up the road and praying like mad. And if we do that, then let's also invade the school. Let's get teachers from the church in there, and let's get on the board of governors and do all that we can to get in there. That's infiltration. The other is to start our own schools. And a lot of Christians are afraid of that, as some are afraid of sending them up the road. When I went to the States, I realized that I didn't like Christian schools, because many of them are there to Christianize our children, and that's not what school's all about, is it? And, you know, you learn sewing by Bible verses, and maths by Proverbs, and, you know, all this sort of thing. And what we're doing, actually, is our fear says that we want our kids to be Christians in a way that we're not. And we hold up expectations for them which they can't meet. And when they get to teenage years, they look at it and they say, "This is a load of rubbish." They want us to do something they can't do. And really, what we've got to do is be really real with our kids. Open about our weakness and our failures. And not raise these banners of expectation. "Have you said your prayers?" I remember saying to Sharon once, when she was just 10, she wasn't a teenager, she was just 10 years of age, I said, "If you never ever said your prayers again, if you never went to church, if you never read your Bible, would God love you any less in a year's time or 10 years' time than he does today?" And her immediate answer was, "No, God loves me." And I suppose that may have come out of the fact that we had to repent of trying to put Christian standards on them, which we weren't making ourselves. And in some way we were able to communicate that God loved them anyway. I think this is particularly relevant when they come to teenage years, because we have our standards. We have our Christian standards, our non-Christian standards, and we end up with a kind of pseudo-spirituality that we want them to get into, that we're not living in ourselves. We have to ask God's forgiveness for that. So our schools, our Sunday schools, our churches, our homes must be places of reality where we have aspirations of where we want to go in God, but a realization of where we are and how frail we are in our attempts to get there. Just let's give you some headlines on some of the things that every parent should know about their teenagers. Teenagers are basically only parents who aren't grown up. They have the luxury of being able to criticize without being made to make it work. They can look at what we're doing and they can criticize it and they can turn it upside down, but they don't have to make it work. I was listening to a teenager that's come into our fellowship just last night. I happened to go into the office and she was sitting there with some of her friends. They were doing their homework in the office. And she was pontificating about the person that she was living with. She's a girl that's just got converted, just come to live in the fellowship. But, I mean, the criticism was diabolical, you know. I mean, it really was terrible. And I had to bite my tongue because I knew I was going to get into an argument with her. And I managed to bite my tongue long enough. And when I left, I was able to say, I hope in a kind of tongue-in-cheek manner, "My dear, I don't know why you're not the Prime Minister of England. I'm sure you're doing better than Mrs. Thatcher." She was pontificating about the family that she was in and the way they did things and everything else. Couldn't see any weakness in herself at all. Secondly, teenagers haven't discovered that some of their world-changing ideas aren't going to work. Kids up to 5 years of age are amazed that Dad knows everything there is to know in the world. From 5 to 12, things change. Dad knows nothing, and teacher knows everything. My teacher says, from 13 to 20, Dad knows nothing, teacher knows nothing, they know everything. After 20, they're absolutely amazed at how much Dad has learned recently. Teenagers have been geared to appreciate gift. I'm just sort of skating through these things because I want to leave these last 10 minutes. To appreciate gift, our society elevates gift. It elevates ability in the sporting world, in the artistic world. It's honed to such a fine degree that very often we feel that even the gifts we have aren't very useful, because we're seeing thrust at us quality gifts. Where has the family evening around the piano gone, where everybody does their recitation and everybody plays their instrument and everybody makes their mistakes and does their drama? We don't do it anymore because we're comparing it with Laurence Olivier and all of these stars that are flashed into our front rooms, and I mean flashed in some cases as well. So we really need to begin to see that everyone has an intrinsic value, that everything that is done has a beauty if it's done from a right attitude, and if it's done to bless, and if it's done for God. And I think we need to start getting back to what God's standards are. And we all know that the painting that your child brings to you doesn't have to be a Rembrandt for you to appreciate it and stick it up on the wall. Well, that applies as they get older as well. We need to really see the gifts, the abilities, the qualities that there are in folk. And I happen to believe that even a smile, somebody who has a lovely smile, that is something to value, something to encourage. Now, I know there's a corniness about Christians and the way they can do this kind of thing, but I think we need to be able to look at one another, and we need to be able to say, that person can change history with their smile, you know, and encourage them to do that. That's just giving one example, but there are many, of course. Teenagers only have today. We need to understand this. Tomorrow does not exist. Everything has to happen now. Otherwise, they've had it. I need this fashion, I need this relationship, or I'll die. I shall never have another chance to see that film if I don't see it this week, and so on. Everything has to be in the immediate. We need to understand that about our kids. Also, we need to understand that teenagers are also traditionalists. They believe that as it was in the beginning, it is now, and it ever shall be. That breakfast will be ready when I feel it should be ready, and if it isn't, I'm going to be in trouble. That my clothes will be ironed. The fact that I am not doing things to your traditions does not matter, but I have my traditions which you must keep to as my parents, and if you don't, you're falling down and you're failing. They're traditionalists in their clothes. Have you noticed how easily they get into wearing uniforms? And they band together in uniforms, obviously, to find their identity together in that way. We need to understand these things about our teenagers. They need money regularly. I don't know, pocket money is an interesting subject. Mustn't get carried away on it. But we put it to our kids because we lived by faith. I think everybody lives by faith, but we did in a special way. We didn't have a regular income. We offered our kids the option of whether... Sorry? Oh, sorry, I thought someone said... No, okay. We offered them the option of having a regular income or living by faith. And everyone opted for living by faith, because they'd seen how our Heavenly Father supplied our needs. So we said, okay, you can have your pound a week or 50p a week or whatever it is that you get, and that's it. Or you can trust us to give us what we think you'll need. And when we don't give it to you, that God will supply from a different source. And they learned to live by faith in that way, and many of them have carried that on into their lifestyle in the world. So let's break with these traditions. Teenagers are under tremendous pressures, morally, financially, educationally, politically, drugs, spiritually, the occult. All of these pressures are there. We need to acquaint ourselves with what's going on out there in the world. Not that we have to understand it from a theological or book point of view, but at least if our kids are going to be faced with things, we need to have some understanding of what's happening there. Teenagers expect Christian parents to have the wisdom of Solomon, the patience of Job, and the resources of the promised land. And our kids need to understand that that's not always how it is. And finally, teenagers expect to be treated like adults, but often behave like children. They want freedom without responsibility. And I think what Christine was saying about this kind of coming of age is important. If we parents want our children to take responsibility, there has to be a point in time where we give them responsibility. And I think the Jews were very good at this. They began to say, you are now in the adult world. If you have a problem with your parents, you have a right to question it. You have a right to go to the elders of the church. You have a right, as a part of the community in which we live, to put your point of view, to be heard. And I think that's part of the process of letting kids grow up, is letting them know that there's a point in time where they can communicate, where their opinions are valued, where they have a platform. And we have actually said to some of these kids when they come to this time, that if you have a problem with your mum and dad, and of course their mums and dads have to agree to this, that you can go and talk to somebody else about it. They may be wrong, you may be right. And it's produced a kind of peace, and it's helped lots of couples through, and teenage kids through, in their times of crisis. I think we've really got to stop there, and I've already taken more time than I wanted to. And if there are one or two questions or comments, just for the last five or so minutes, we'll pick them up. If not, we'll just pray, and you can all go home and enjoy the rest of this lovely Saturday together. Any questions? I think to a degree, I think in a Sunday school, an organized Sunday school or a school of any kind, it's good to have some principles which you let the parents know you're going to run the Sunday school by, or the school or the class or the youth group or anything else. But I think with a Sunday school, it is a little bit different, say, to a school. And there is a limit to what you can do, and the discipline must be related perhaps to whether they can actually attend the class or something like that, whether they have to be put out of the class. It's not an easy one, but I don't think without the permission of parents that you can rush in and start sort of disciplining in a heavy-handed way kids that have been put in your care. So I think it would have to be that, Johnny, if you're not going to behave, I'm really sorry, you can't watch the flannel graph. You know what I mean? It would have to be something along those lines. But it's probably good that wherever we're bringing kids together like that, that we let the parents know what our style of leadership is and how we're intending to run the Sunday school and where they can be contacted if there are problems that arise whilst the kids are in our care. Christina said that we've had people living with us and children living with us, and we've always tried not to overrule the authority of the parents so that they have an identifiable source of authority. If I take authority, it's because it's been delegated to me by the parents, not because I take it. So I think that's important in any situation. Yeah. 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 Qualities. Yeah, yeah. Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And even, you know, if we consider breastfeeding to be good, if a woman can't do it, God's going to work through.